The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Well, duty-free was the basis of a business empire that Chuck Feeney spent years building up, amassing a multi-billion dollar fortune. A fortune that he has spent the last 35 years giving away. Through Atlantic Philanthropies, Feeney gave almost $9 billion to various causes. Nearly $2 billion of that was spent on education and other initiatives in Ireland. Later this year, the company's accounts are set to hit zero. We're joined by the man responsible for managing the money, Christopher Uxley. Chris, your organisation is in an unusual position of not wanting to have any money at all. You're nearly there. How does Chuck feel about it? Have you spoken to him recently?
Oh, I see him periodically. I saw him about 2 weeks ago in San Francisco. But I think Chuck is thrilled with this. This has given him great satisfaction to have deployed his wealth in ways that make a difference, and he's able to see the fruits of his labors. So a very satisfying experience for him.
How will you celebrate it?
probably go off and rest for a few weeks. It's an intense experience. To do this kind of work well is very demanding.
Well, he lives a very modest lifestyle, doesn't he? So he probably won't go crazy himself in the celebrations, will he?
No, that's not Chuck's style. He certainly recognizes success and achievement when it happens, but he's more taken with what have we got to show for it? No, there will be no wild celebrations. There'll be quiet celebrations. Our staff will gather with Chuck, and we'll just have a quiet recognition of what's been accomplished.
What's he like as a person?
Intense, in a good way. Energetic, attentive, very engaged. Behind the surface of that intensity is somebody who is very attentive to people, very empathetic, very observant. He did a lot of his work, and Atlantic did for many years, anonymously. That gave him the ability to be who he is, not have to perform, not have to engage with people in artificial ways.
He's obviously someone who's a very driven person to achieve what he did in business. And then he made up his mind about giving all of this money away during his lifetime. Where do you think that came from? When you look at the man that you know and what you know about is it something in his background, his family, his childhood? Where did that come from?
Yeah, that's a good question. I obviously didn't know Chuck as a young person or young man, but it's pretty clear that his family influenced him, his mother in particular, who was a very energetic, enterprising, but very caring person. She was a nurse. There's a story told early on in Chuck's biography by Conor O'Cleary, the billionaire who wasn't, where he describes Chuck's recalling his mother getting in the car and driving so that she could pass a man who had Lou Gehrig's disease and was on his way to his work so that she could lean out the window and say, I'm going your way, can I give you a ride? That vignette, I think, stuck with Chuck and is indicative of the kind of empathetic character that he became. He himself, in growing up, I think, had modest means and saw around him the opportunity to help others. So I think that empathy has its roots in his childhood and in his own life experience. And I think that's behind his desire to deploy his wealth to make a difference in the lives of others.
We have a short clip here of Chuck Feeney talking about an experience that influenced his thought process.
One of my nephew had this this problem, a cancer problem. I went to see the doctor because, you know, if I wanted to say that I could get to powerful people, I'd rather get to a powerful person who could give me an answer about Jimmy's problem. And I, through my contacts, the one doctor stated it kind of like this. He's, he's got a tall mountain to climb. And he was telling me politely that that he probably was not going to make it. And then I sort of, you realized you got all this money and the trappings of power, and yet you can't do anything for someone that you care about. And so that was when I started thinking about some of these issues.
Just listening to him there, Chris, did he ever talk about that to you?
Yes. I met his nephew after he'd been diagnosed when he came to London. It had a profound effect on Chuck, a recognition that life is fleeting. By that time, Chuck had started engaging in philanthropy in a quiet way. The foundation was, its investments were predominantly still tied into businesses, and so the giving was modest compared to what it was to become. But it did have a profound effect in Chuck. In fact, Chuck stepped back from the business for a year after his nephew died and reflected, I think, deeply on what wealth meant and what he could do. The death of his nephew, I think, did motivate him to look into cancer research. And there were considerable funds invested by the Atlantic Philanthropies under Chuck's guidance and leadership in cancer research, including immunotherapy, which was something that was not regarded as a promising area. Cancer Research Institute generated a Nobel Prize winner, James Allison, resulting from immunotherapy research. I think it also reinforced Chuck's commitment to deploy his wealth sooner rather than later.
He's a famously frugal man. Does he dislike outward shows of wealth?
Chuck is about value for money. And so the question would be, why misuse money? Frugal may be a good word. He's not a skinflint. He's not.
Well, certainly if he's given away $9 billion, he's not.
But the issue for him is value for money.
Is it true he has a $5 watch?
Well, maybe up to $15 now, given inflation. he does. He has a Casio watch, and he says, why would I have a Rolex that doesn't tell better time? He talks about flying economy, which he did late into his 70s, despite us telling him that the business policy was that if he was flying more than 7 hours, he should go business. He says, well, I fly business class. Doesn't get me there any faster. I think there's a sense that wealth represents the return on hard work. Why would you waste it?
One of the things that he really sought to do was to improve people's lives in a way that can be life-changing, whether that is through education, whether that is through investment in health and medical breakthroughs and so forth. But when it comes to giving money away, lots of people who would have huge amounts of wealth would say, okay, I'm going to give away 10% of my wealth. I'm going to even give away 50% of my wealth. In his case, how much did he decide to keep?
He provided some for his five children, his first wife, and then decided the rest was to be given away. And he's done that.
He's living in a rented house in San Francisco.
That's correct, a rented apartment in San Francisco. You know, San Francisco is a nice place to live, but it's a modest place. And that's been consistent with his living arrangements for decades.
How does he feel about he has convinced and been very influential in talking to billionaires about not just leaving a certain amount of wealth behind for philanthropic purposes, but to give it away now? And Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are two cases in point, and the giving pledge. What about the likes of Jeff Bezos, now the richest man in the world? He said he's going to give away $10 billion, which is tremendously generous in one sense, but he's worth $130. So he could give away 90% or 95% without it fundamentally changing his quality of life.
I think that's right. I would start with Chuck's acknowledgement that he's not going to dictate or tell anybody else what to do with their wealth. He doesn't see himself as being a proselytizer pressuring others to consider philanthropy. I think he does it more through example and saying, try it, you'll like it. You know, Jeff Bezos giving away $10 billion, I think, is about 7% of his net worth, although I haven't checked the stock market recently. For Chuck Feeney, Forbes acknowledged him as the leading giver in terms of percentage of net worth, having given away 313,000% of his personal net worth. I think Chuck's message is try it. You'll find nothing more satisfying or more meaningful.
With the kind of wealth that has been accumulated by an elite group of multi-billionaires, many people would say, why don't they just pay more tax and then let government and let states decide what is the best way of distributing that wealth to people who need it?
That's a really a profound question in society. What's the role of wealth, taxation, policies? It's clear, however, that there is a role for private wealth to engage independently of government in philanthropy. What if government goes off the rails? What if government doesn't do things that the public or part of the public wishes to have? Who challenges government? Philanthropy can take risks that corporations with shareholders and governments with voters can't take. They can afford to do things for better and for worse with less accountability that can lead to cutting-edge prototype work. They can also challenge governments, as Atlantic did with HIV/AIDS antiretrovirals in South Africa, or they can partner with governments, as Atlantic did with the Program for Research in Third Level Institutions, PRTLI, that enhanced the government's interest in strengthening research and higher education in Ireland.
What about Chuck and politics itself, whether it's American politics and what his views were? Certainly in an Irish context, he was very supportive of the peace process. He was very supportive of Sinn Féin, met Gerry Adams in the early 1990s at the beginning of the peace process. And I think he donated over $700,000 to Sinn Féin's Washington office. So he clearly took an interest in politics.
I would recharacterize that as an interest in conflict resolution. He was not so much a champion of any one party or any one approach or perspective. What he was interested in was in resolving the conflict. The Atlantic Foundation supported quietly behind the scenes both communities, multiple communities, to engage in dialogue.
He also supported, I suppose, what were policy issues rather than necessarily party political issues, whether, you know, in Ireland, whether it was around access to abortion, women's rights, the LGBT community, those kinds of issues Atlantic Philanthropies has been engaged with as well.
Chuck is not a supporter of abortion as such. That's not his policy. But the issues of women's health and choice and the LGBT community, the voice of that community, I mean, in the end, the Irish people spoke in a referendum about what they felt about marriage equality.
I suppose some critics would have said that was this a case of funds emanating from a person in the United States to influence the outcome of referendums here in Ireland, buying Irish referendums?
Yeah. These are good questions, and they're happening around the world in terms of the influence of wealth and people on policy and countries. But let me emphasize that Chuck is an Irish citizen. The staff that made the decisions were all Irish citizens based in an Irish office.
How is his health, Chris?
He is doing well. He's not as he's not traveling anymore. He loves to have visitors and have a sense of what's going on. I would say his health is good, and for age appropriate, 89, is very attentive and interested in what is happening at Atlantic, what's happening with the remaining funds, what we're doing, what's happening in the world. But I think he's enjoying stepping back. For the first time, I'm observing somebody who is relaxed, enjoying reflecting on what's been done.
He's not tweeting about Donald Trump or anything like that, Chris, from the apartment in San Francisco.
No, no, but you know that 20 years ago when he was interviewed by the New York Times, he was regarded as somebody who at that time was living his life as in reverse of Donald Trump's. I'd say that's still true.
When people reflect on Chuck Feeney's legacy and what he has achieved and what he has done, especially in a country like Ireland where he's been incredibly generous and made such a difference, there won't be plaques or buildings named after him, Chris. He's not into that sort of thing.
No, he's not. And there's at least one practical reason for that. If you can invite somebody else to fund the project and encourage them to lend their name to it, and that's the basis for them giving money, why not give them the naming rights and double your money?
Chris Uxley of Atlantic Philanthropies, thank you very much for joining us on the program.